Hey, I'm going to talk about identifying both the adult and the larval stage of LBAM, something I've been doing quite a bit of the last 2 years. And first go through some of the characteristics that are very easy, we found to be fairly easy to discriminate LBAM. And then I'm going to, which of course includes the wings, genitalia, and also how we tell these apart from common native species. Then we're going to go on to looking at larval characteristics, which are more complicated, though we've gotten somewhat of a handle on that, though we've had to rely somewhat on DNA barcoding at this point. And then after we do that, Todd is going to go into the lucid key development that we're working on for separating LBAM in California from non-targets. And this project is expanding over a wider, eventually is going to cover a good part of North America. So this is your basic LBAM in trap, which is, I guess we're up to around 50,000 that have crossed my desk. Mostly males, and it's a quite variable species. Though, like a lot of variable species, once you've seen enough of them, it starts to become very clear what you're seeing. And here are the three basic morphs that you see in California, and they somewhat grade into each other. These are all the males, which are variable, whereas the females in California are pretty much invariant. Okay, so the males, like other tortricids, though not all, have what's called the costal fold. And here would be the head of the LBAM right here, and that's the leading edge of the front wing. What's nice about a costal fold is, well, one thing I've learned about a costal fold when I give workshops is that if I show just a regular flat picture on a screen, it often doesn't really communicate. When you can look at this under a stereoscope, it's much easier to see. Also, there are other costal folds in California tortricids. However, the LBAM costal fold tends to have sort of this arrangement with scales that sort of go with the flow of the wing, and also kind of in the big picture is not extremely developed. And you also get some where this fold is folded out into the sticky, so it's a little less obvious, but you sort of learn to see that little shadow of where the costal fold is. Okay, another aspect, though we rarely have to do this at this point, only really in very badly damaged sticky trap specimens, but we look at the genitalia, and turns out LBAM has these little lobes on the end of the valve, which are somewhat similar to the native Clepsis tortricids in California. However, note that these are very weak, and also there's sort of a little cleft there between the lobe and the bottom part of the valve, whereas the Clepsis, it tends to be more of a, you can form more of a continuous line from the base to the apex. Also, the Uncus is somewhat distinct in shape, though also quite similar at times to the Clepsis. It's interesting to get calls from people in other states that are looking at LBAM samples, and they're going through what I went through at first of having sort of a, they get a Clepsis, but it's pretty darn close, so they're a little bit afraid that it's an LBAM, but I can reassure them, you know, and if they'll send me the specimens about these characteristics, they hold up pretty well. Okay, now the females, of course, they don't have the costal fold. However, of course, remember we're trapping for males with these pheromone traps, and any females we get are pretty much accidental. So probably in total we've gotten in the neighborhood of 15 or 20 females out of the 50 or so thousand that we've looked at. But so, okay, no costal fold. Also, you get sort of that unpatterned kind of morph that you get some of the males, but you never get the bicolored LBAM where this half of the wing is all dark. Also note these little dark spots. You get these dark patches right here on the thorax and along this margin of the wing on females. Another really useful characteristic in diagnosing LBAM is the speckling on the hind wing. None of our other native tortricids or tortricines in the same subfamily as LBAM seem to have this. And it also shows up on the underside, so you know the LBAM that end up getting flying in and ending up upside down in the traps are easy to discriminate. Okay, time out. At the end of the lecture, I'm going to have a raffle for some of these LBAM samples that we prepare. Actually, sort of a joke, but what we've been doing is we've been sending these LBAM that are glued to paper and it says CDFA on it as, you know, sort of demonstration so people can, you know, examine these under stereoscope. And we put a little green dot on them, so hopefully they won't end up in a trap somewhere. And they're also being used as part of the national LBAM survey. Okay, now we're going to talk a little bit about female genitalia. And really the main thing here is that the versa copulatrix takes up really most of the abdomen on LBAM. Well, there's some other tortricids that have really lengthy ducts like this, but they tend to have like a band of sclerotized material on there or whatever. Also, the shape of what's called the signum in the corpus bursae, this little sickle-shaped thing, is pretty distinct in LBAM, having this little hook. So females and males both really have very good diagnostics. Where it's more difficult, as we've suggested, is with the larvae. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about general tortricid larval characteristics because, of course, when they're screening or in the field, sometimes they find other larvae besides tortricids. I must say, though, that the screening has gotten very good. So one area you look at is where the rear end there, what's called the anal fork. All LBAM have an anal fork. Also being a tortricine, tortricid in that subfamily, well, being a tortricid, you have this little saddle here. So these cedi, these dorsal cedi are on the same panaculum. And then a tortricine character, though it doesn't hold up everywhere, but for LBAM and many tortricines, these two cedi are on separate panacula. Also, when you look at the eighth abdominal segment here, you have a ceta right there, a subdorsal ceta that's anterior to that spiracle, whereas non-tortricids, they tend to be dorsal. So this is a way that you can tell LBAM from other microlepidoptera that you commonly can encounter. So when developing a Lucid key, as we'll see in a few minutes, one of the advantages of Lucid is that we can combine, it's very good for variable characters. One of the problems with traditional tortricid larval keys has been that you have a number of exceptions. So in your key, you a lot of times say it's this way or this way or this way. So it makes it very cumbersome. Whereas with Lucid, you can code all these different possibilities of variation and still end up in the right place. But so some of the, as I mentioned before, the anal comb is one thing we look at. With LBAM, they tend to be seven little forks or tines in the anal fork. The, as I mentioned a minute ago, we have that common panaculum for the D ceta on the dorsum of the A9, and the SD1 is anterior of the spiracle. But then another important characteristic is, which I'll show you right now, is that they tend to be, the larvae tend to be very unmarked on the legs, on the head, and on the prothoracic shield. So there's not a lot of patterning or marking, very, very simply patterned, and oftentimes kind of a, you know, sort of a greenish-brown color without much flecks or dark spots. And then the legs, much the same way. You don't see dark little sclerites on the legs like you often do with some of the other non-targets. This is an earlier instar, and note the difference in color. Color is really a problem for the body in that it, well, earlier instars tend to be more brown, and first instars actually have black heads, but they're not marked. But the host plant greatly influences what the larvae look like, and that's true of a lot of tetricids. So an LBAM feeding on a grape is going to be the color of a grape. It's not going to be green like this. So color can only take you so far with these larvae. Okay, here again is the anal fork with, again, 7, though occasionally there are 8. So of course with the lucid key we can put in that sometimes there are 8. This one here has been critical point dried, so that's why it's this pale color. Another thing about LBAM, but it's also true of many of the non-target tetricid larvae, is they have a really nice kind of even texture of little spinules on the body. I don't think this is going to be all that useful, but of course it can help us separate, you know, these from possibly other tetricids or other non-tetricids. We've been looking more at the head lately and looking at the proportions of these various adfrontal CD and PCD, and there definitely seems to be conditions in LBAM that are fairly consistent, but this will be one of those characters that's somewhat overlapping. The mandibles turned out to be have a lot of potential. You can remove the mandible, and this has been used in New Zealand where there's a single little tooth right here, two teeth right here in LBAM, whereas some of the non-targets have only a single tooth. Okay, now it's time for Todd to go through the lucid.
Okay, thanks, Mark. So I just want to go through real quickly some of the resources we're developing to allow people to identify LBAM, both adults and larvae. The main resource we're developing is going to be in the form of a lucid tool called LBAM ID. And this will be released early next year for the public for public use. Some of our goals here are to provide lucid keys, of course, for identifying both Lepidoptera adults to family, so you can get your bug to hopefully some family in Lepidoptera, and then if it is a tetricid, you can move on and identify it down to genus species. And if you're in California, that'll be the first focus of our tool. Hopefully this will get you down to either confirming or not confirming LBAM as your specimen. We have diagrammatic or schematic illustrations of the key characters to help you identify what those characters are, and then fact sheets that will tell you more information about each species. We also have extensive photographs of the wing pattern, variation, genitalia, other life stages, etc. And then something I'll talk about here in a few minutes is a DNA sequence search tool. Really, we're integrating DNA sequences with a lucid tool, which is something that's relatively recent. So here's just a quick demonstration of one of the lucid keys. This is the adult Lepidoptera family key. You can see over here you have character states. Over here you have taxa. You choose a character state. You don't need to choose them in order. You can choose any character that you immediately see, and it will show up down here, and then it will add or discard taxa depending on the state of that character in those taxa. So just real quickly here, I've done a quick demonstration. We've chosen a scaled proboscis and a tympanum present, and just by a combination of those two characters, I've discarded all of these families, and I'm left with the pyralis or crambids. So look at that real briefly here. Here's a couple of our schematic drawings, scaled proboscis and tympanum on the abdomen. Immediately gets you to a pyralid, and if you're looking at an LBAM trap, this Achira species is commonly found in LBAM traps in California. So this is just one example of using a lucid key, and it is quite a bit easier to use than some sort of dichotomous key, which you may be familiar with. This is an example of our larval key, and it is a lot more complicated in that you have to know what the characters are, a little bit more than you do with the adult key, but again, there will be illustrations for each of these, and it may not always resolve to one particular species. as you'll see here in a second, we still need molecular identification for many of the larval stages. But it will at least get you in the ballpark of, is it LBAM or is it not LBAM? These are some of the drawings that we've done for the Lucid keys, head characters, head color, position of the panacula, how many seed are in the panacula, the preference of the larvae as far as host preference, some of the crochet arrangements, markings on the prothoracic shield, again some of the head characters, and then just the general form of the larvae. This is one of the fact sheets. This is the fact sheet for LBAM. You can see where it shows the different phenotypes, different life stages, and then the genitalia photographs that Mark just showed you. So one new tool that we're incorporating into this LucidKey project is a DNA sequence search tool. And this will allow people who might not have access to some larger internal databases in the USDA to actually search for a sequence and determine if the sequence they're searching on is or is not LBAM. There are many current methods out there that are used by people in some databases like GenBank and Bold. A lot of these rely on blasts, word searches, or alignments. And we've noticed that there can be problems with these type of searches in that they result in false positives. Another problem that we notice is that some of the public databases have unreliable data, and we're trying to fix that by creating our own internal database composed of only specimens identified by torturicid experts. So the DNA sequence search tool that we're integrating into the Lucid keys will perform an exact word search based on the entire sequence that you enter and will only return exact matches. Therefore, there won't be any false positives involved with this key. Of course, there could be a false negative if it's not present within the key, but we can't really do anything about that. And this sequence, of course, is based on the widely used former region of CO1. So here's just a mock-up of the DNA search tool. This actually does work. It's not released to the public yet, although we'll be looking for people to actually do some testing with this in the near future. You enter in your sequence. Your sequence will probably be longer than the one I have here. This is just a demonstration. You can either submit the query to search for that sequence, or you can verify the sequence, which will go in and look for primers that are still in the sequence and delete those. It will look for the length of the sequence, and it will help you determine if you're entering in the correct data that we need to search on in this field. If we click Submit Query, in this case, this exact sequence matches with these five haplotypes of LBAM. And so if we enter this into the database and click Search, you could confirm that this sequence did come from a specimen of LBAM. So just some real quick conclusions as far as identifying LBAM and the tools we're coming up with. Lucid keys will be available early next year to help people who aren't torturicid experts identify the species. However, DNA for confirmation will still be required for some larvae, especially early instar larvae. And there's some larvae that are just so similar to LBAM that they cannot be reliably separated based on the morphology. This DNA search tool will be available early next year also. It will allow labs with sequence data to either confirm or deny that the specimens they have are indeed LBAM. And there's some quicker diagnostics underway that I'll talk about in the next talk for Norman. And we are also developing similar resources over the next few years for other torturicids that could potentially become invasive into the United States. And so we're trying to be proactive as far as developing these resources so we don't have this problem in the future, trying to catch up to where we are. So that's the end of this talk. We can answer any questions you have real quickly. I want to thank everyone at CFIS for funding us, a couple people at USDA, of course Jerry, the technicians at CDFA for doing a lot of the hard work. And we can answer questions real quickly before we go on to the next talk. Yeah?
A couple of questions for Mark. What are the most common wild targets you're picking up in the
traps? Yeah, and that's a good question. That's the operative question amongst the traps, because the trap, what we get in the pheromone traps and what we get from nurseries aren't always the same sorts of things. We get a lot of Clepsis paratana very commonly of other non-target torturicids. Of course, that it's shifted some because screening has become better. So when we first started this, we were getting a lot of pyralids like the Achira occidentalis that Todd showed in his part of the talk. So, but I imagine in the, you know, the other surveys in other parts of the country where there's less screening, of course, they're seeing a lot of that same stuff. So we're incorporating that into our keys.
You're not finding OLR or marsh
perch? Yeah, we are some, but yeah, I would say less, but we are getting it. That's a highly variable species, though. Uh-huh.
Mark, I wanted to be clear that the Dr. Brown model and his thoughts on the hindwing are both male and female.
Yes.
Yes.
Kind of a dark grayish. Uh-huh.
How selective are the traps?
Well, you know, in a way, that's almost a hard question. At first, we had a better sense of that. I mean, and of course, that's a, I guess, sort of almost a political question, too, because, of course, we don't really know what truly bumbles into traps, what's attracted to the traps. I did a project over, I guess, about 25 years ago for APHIS, where I was actually trapping for some of these same potential invasives, and I learned way back then that you get a lot of non-target tortricids and other things. Okay, we'll move on to the next talk.
Like I said, Dr. Mark couldn't be here because of travel woes, so Todd will be filling in for him for the next talk.